Hi, my name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to be moderating today's webinar on what keeps you up at night, the issues credit and collection executives worry about most. Everybody's got them, those nightmares that immediately activate the acid in your stomach and tie you up in knots, but you're definitely not alone. Chances are someone else out there in the credit and collection industry is worried about the same issue too. Today, a panel of credit and collection industry executives are going to share their insights into how they and everybody can sleep a little better at night. This webinar is being generously sponsored by MicroBuild. You'll get the chance to hear about them a little later in our program. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope everybody will spend a couple of minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Now, let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Roy Engel is co-founder, president, and CEO of Team Recovery, Inc., which has been located in Stowe, Ohio since 1999. He personally oversees the consulting and servicing of the corporation's credit-granting clients. Roy's been in the debt collection industry since 1989, and his second job out of college was selling a collection service. He, along with co-founder and COO Leslie Engel, have overseen the creation of a unique and highly effective debt collection platform. Roy's held various board positions with the organizations such as the American Association of Healthcare Administrative Management and the Ohio Receivables Management Association. Jay Gonzalez is president of Action Collection Agencies in Middleborough, Massachusetts. Action Collection Agency of Boston is a 51-year-old collection agency, and ACA Revenue Systems is its first-party ARM company. The company serves healthcare providers in New England and nationally. Jay is a past president of ACA International and just concluded a term as board member for the association. He is an ACA certified instructor and holds IFCCE and MCE designations, a bachelor's degree from UMass, and a master's degree in healthcare administration from Salva Regina College. Tim Haig is the president at State Collection Service. He joined the company, which was founded by his grandfather, in 2009. Over the past several years, Tim has played a key role in State Collection Service's exceptional growth. During his tenure, the company expanded into two new locations, grown its staff by more than 300%, and continued garnering national attention as the receivables company of choice for major healthcare systems throughout the United States. Tim holds a degree in business management from Northern Michigan University. David Kelly is an equity owner and the chief vision caster for Preferred Group of Tampa. David has served in many different roles during his 20-plus year career with the company. He has a bachelor's degree in business management and marketing and has a master's and doctoral level degrees associated with leadership development. He is a past president of the Florida Collectors Association and past chairperson for ACA International's Healthcare Services Committee. David also serves on numerous charitable boards. Through Preferred Impact, Preferred Teaching and Professional Development Division, David shares his passion for teaching and encouraging business and leadership best practices. He also coaches high school baseball and is involved in serving and leading in a variety of mission trips. Thank you very much, our panelists, for joining us today. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we'll get to them when the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded, and a recording will be made available in the coming days on AccountsRecovery.net. One final reminder, I want to ask everyone to take a minute and fill out the survey that should pop up on your screen after the webinar is over today. You'll also receive a link via email tomorrow to access the survey. Participating in the survey helps me develop content that is to exactly what you're looking for and to find the speakers you want to hear from. And one lucky survey participant will win a Starbucks gift card. So please take a minute and fill out the survey when you get a chance. With that, let's launch into today's discussion. For those of you who've been on my webinars before, today's going to be a little bit different because we're not talking about sort of my nightmares or what excites me also about the industry and keeps me up at night. We're going to talk about this panel. And the first topic we're going to talk about today is new business, as in where to find new clients. David, maybe you want to take a first stab and we'll go around the panel. What concerns you, what excites you, as it pertains to this area?
Well, thanks. It's great to be here. Great to be on this panel with a lot of really smart guys. For us, we're a 34-year healthcare collections agency. And so obviously the land of healthcare is where we stay in, and that's where we determine where our clients are. We're very relational based. We don't depend a lot on just cold calling and sales. And that's a track that a lot of agencies take. But you know, one of the things that concerns us being kind of selective in our business is obviously the consolidation of healthcare clients and the paring down in that. And so that's always a challenge for us. We don't go out and just look for high volumes. And so the right kind of business has to be there for us. And with the number of changes that have happened over the years, things have gotten a little bit more generic as far as determining those lines of business that may be a great match for us. But, you know, as far as concerns, again, the consolidation in our industry, a lot of health systems coming in, and maybe not being a great fit for us. We've been very fortunate, though. We've got a great referral base, a lot of 30-plus year clients in the larger hospitals, and so that opens up a lot of doors for us. But obviously a shrinking base and the number and the variety of things, opportunities available for us in the healthcare field is always a concern for us.
This is Tim.
Yeah, go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, I'll jump in on here. And first thing I was going to say is obviously, you know, thanks for having me, and it's a pleasure to be on this panel. What kept me up last night was this webinar. So I just wanted to let you know on that. But really from a sales standpoint, I agree with what David said about, you know, the relationships. Relationships are extremely crucial today. We attend obviously a number of trade shows around the country, healthcare or 100% healthcare. Those have declined in attendance over the years. But, you know, as a recent example, a new client that we just brought on about a month ago, we actually started that relationship, met that individual at this hospital 9 years ago at a trade show. And just over the years, kept in touch. When it came for time for her to make a decision, the funny thing was is she got us on the RFP list. Brought us in, and then she retired. Those relationships are extremely important. And I think from a healthcare standpoint, we see a lot of executives move from system to system, and we've gained a lot of business from having that relationship, having, you know, a director or a VP leave a facility and move on to somewhere else, and they bring us in with them. So I think those are definitely key things.
Mike, it's Jay. You know, I would concur with both Tim and David in their comments. I've been in healthcare. I was in healthcare originally in the hospital side, and before I went into this business in Boston and then bought this company 25 years ago or so. But we've always had this expression in healthcare, and I hope a lot of the individuals listening into the call today do healthcare. I know most of the members of our certainly the ACA International, but a lot of the industry in general do a lot of healthcare. So hopefully we're speaking to folks in the industry, but I know there are others. But it's often been described as an incestuous industry. And to Tim's point, a lot of people do move from one organization to another. So I think it's really good to, it's a very relationship based. Our business, I think, generally is very relationship based. So it pays to not burn bridges. It pays to try to, you know, to obviously do the best job we can, because, you know, that could benefit you down the line when people make changes. But also in our case, we've had a lot of organic growth too within our existing clients. We do, like Tim, we do, in fact, Tim and I actually share a business, share a client in here in New England. But, you know, there's a lot of that kind of crossover business. But I think organically within your client base, it's a good place to look for opportunity too. So as the clients grow, I mean, fortunately, we've been on generally on the good side of the merger and acquisition side, but it's tough when you're not. And I've seen both sides of that. Things that would keep you up obviously at night is in terms of worrying, you know, about your clients. You know, when the contract's up, you know, when is the other shoe going to fall? I would encourage people to try to be cognizant of not having too many eggs in one basket. If you have a very large concentration in one area, it would be good to think about, you know, maybe trying to either diversify or try to like sort of spread that around a little bit, because you can still be exposed. Even if it's a good big client, you can still run the risk of some exposure there.
Hi, Mike. This is Roy. Thanks for hosting the webinar and for all of your work for our industry. It's much appreciated. What the question is regarding new business and where to find it. And from being in the industry for 30 years, I've seen really two main ways that sales or new business is structured within an agency. The first I call centralized, the second decentralized. So with the centralized model, you really have an owner or a sales manager who's very, very good. They go to the trade shows, they're visible in the industry, and you have a support staff that really gets leads for those few salespeople. Decentralized, you have multiple salespeople. So I think for the people listening to the call, in terms of finding new clients and what keeps you up at night, depending upon what model you have, what keeps you up is falling into a trap within that model. So as compliance becomes a bigger and bigger piece of our industry, if you only have the centralized model of an owner or a sales manager, what keeps you up is that more and more of your energies are directed towards compliance and less towards sales. And vice versa with the other centralized problem is, are you falling into a trap of you're constantly trying to look for those great salespeople or someone who will set your sales on fire, and they really don't exist as much as they used to in our industry, and you just want to try to avoid falling into a trap within either one of those models.
You know, this is Tim again. I'll just add to that, and you know, kind of funny story. I have people ask quite often, how many salespeople do you guys have? And I always tell them, you know, we have over 700 salespeople, because it is everybody in the organization that helps with that. I mean, our actual sales team is made up of two people, and they're extremely good at what they do. But if the rest of the company can't get the results, can't provide the customer service, and provide, you know, a sense of a good name around us, we can't do that. So try to involve the rest of the staff in the sales process as much as we can, giving them updates. And, you know, it's a time to celebrate when we land a new client, and everybody feels a part of that. So I think that's an important thing. And lastly, you know, I talked a lot about relationships. And what I mean by relationship is, to that point, it's not just going out and buying gifts and buying dinners. Yes, being in front of them is always very helpful, but it is that relationship is giving them what you sold them, and hopefully it's beyond what you sold them. So again, getting them the results, the customer service, the lack of complaints, and also providing them with any education that you can. So I think that's where you want to be the first person they call when they have a question related to the industry.
Mike, this is David. Something that Tim said is something that's really relevant for us here, if preferred, in Tampa, and that is that really all of our associates are part of our sales force per se, and so you know, we're creating an environment that is pushing us forward and allowing our work, because we always tell our folks that sales is more of a byproduct. It's not a focus for us. It's something that will happen. And our biggest line of business comes from referrals. And, you know, I think everybody's kind of touched on that. And again, I started saying, again, what Tim said on the relationship side, it is much more than just surface. It is really having a passion for our clients to succeed. And so our people know that the best way for us to grow is for us to understand that the job that we do here and the representation creates more opportunities, and really growth for us is more a byproduct of really paying attention to our processes. and understanding the product will kind of take care of itself on our end. That's not to say that we don't promote ourselves individually. We certainly do. But for us, growth really comes as a byproduct of doing the right things for our clients that we currently have. And that's a focus that everybody participates in. So it really gives us a lot of unity in moving forward with that.
And Mike, this is Roy. That's the you're going to ask a little later about what we're excited about. And I think that in our industry, that is something to truly be excited about, are those opportunities with those clients and how you can expand and then expand referrals from doing just a great job for those credit granters.
Mike, it's Jay. You know, when you think of it, really, if we're really going to get honest about things, we all sort of do the same thing. We all generally, you know, we get accounts assigned to us, we send letters, we make phone calls, we take calls, we do pretty much all the same thing. But I think what we have to do, like kind of David might have touched on a little bit, is I think we have to find ways that truly sets us apart and different value-added things that we can provide clients. Different things, maybe different ways of doing things, but always with a focus on valuing them. And it doesn't matter whether they're a new client or they've been with you for 20 or 30 years. A good friend of mine in the industry has a thing in his client services department, his agency, and it says, treat every client as if you're just about to lose them. And I think sometimes we can get complacent because a lot of our growth, like with David, a lot of it's referrals or organic growth within existing clients. That's just gold. And you have to make sure that you value that and treat it well and find different ways to set you apart from your competition.
Excellent. Well, at this point, I just want to jump in and pause the discussion for a minute and talk a little bit about today's sponsor. Microbuilt. For more than 35 years, Microbuilt has been helping businesses assess and manage risk. They were a pioneer in the now exploding alternative credit data space, and as such, have refined their products and services to deliver true business value. Over the years, Microbuilt has invested heavily in acquiring best-in-class data. They've built sophisticated systems for keeping their data fresh and accurate, and powerful predictive models for making decisions around lending, leasing, collections, and risk management. With Microbuilt, you can customize the products you need and how much you want to spend. And all their products are provided through a single, simple access portal. Whether you're working in originations or debt collection, screening a potential hire or tenant, planning for growth, or keeping up with regulatory requirements, Microbuilt can be your partner, providing the insight and information you need to protect your business, grow your bottom line, and keep your company running smoothly. For more information, please contact Microbuilt today at 800-884-4747 or visit www.microbuilt, and that's spelled microbuilt, microbuilt.com. Thanks again to Microbuilt for sponsoring today's webinar. With that, let's pick up our discussion. We've talked a little bit about this, but sort of the next evolution of talking about new business is growth. You know, how an agency will grow, how an agency expands, because if you're not growing, you're dying. So says the old cliche. So what I'd like to do maybe is go around the panel, and this time maybe we could start with Jay and talk a little bit about how you're approaching growth, strategic planning, that area of the business.
Sure. Now, bear in mind, we're not a very large company. We're under 100 people, and we do first-party and third-party collections. But I think for us, a lot of the growth has naturally been, as we've talked about, has been from increasing your existing portfolio of business with your existing clients. But also, it's been to try to broaden, try to find different, I have to call them the different veins we can mine, is see how far we can go with certain things. So we've got, like say within healthcare, for example, we've tried to reach out into different segments within healthcare. So it's not just the hospitals, it would be physicians, we're finding anyway a lot more first party work on the physician side. They've kind of come alongside the hospitals and recognizing that they don't have the resources. But bearing in mind that a lot of hospital systems, whether it's Epic or Meditech or some of the others, in many cases are combining, so hospitals and physicians are together. But generally, where there's an opportunity there is to go after that and other maybe allied healthcare services you might not typically like. So if you have a specialty, you have something that you consider to be a very strong, really strong suit for you is to try to take that as far as you can go. The other thing would be through strategic acquisitions. We've done some of those over the years where we found either a geographic or a market segment or a piece of business, even within healthcare, that we found that would be attractive to us, and that would sort of provide the kind of growth in those areas.
This is David. For us, we we have a thing that we keep in front of us all the time when it comes to dealing with our existing clients, and that is that we have responsibility to communicate to them what we're seeing, help them really be a part of bettering all of their processes that involve us. And we have to remember, always have to remember that, you know, our clients have a really big pie, and we are a slice of that pie. But for us, that slice is the entire pie. And so we have a sense of urgency and a sense of responsibility with everything that they give to us to follow up on recovering revenue for them. And, you know, we buy into their mission because our mission is to provide resources for them to help people get better. And so, you know, that creates us passion lines. And we've got to communicate back to our clients when we see areas, if their aging is popping up. I have a responsibility to go in and just let them see this because, you know, that small piece of the pie for them, they may not be monitoring real closely. So I have a responsibility that's part of my, I have to be accountable for that. And then create options for them. And where I'm going with this from a growth standpoint and expanding in our business plan, strategic business plan, is to give them options. If we see they have a deficiency, and again, we need to not just know what we're doing, but we need to understand what we're doing. We need to understand our portion and their revenue cycle. So we need to understand from the time that somebody, the doors go swish, swish in the emergency room, to that time until all the way completed until our client receives complete remuneration for that service provided. We need to understand what's going on there. And when we see a fail or we see a deficiency in the process, and we see that while we're working their accounts, then I have a responsibility to create options and give our client options. And we do that through a program that would be ongoing that maybe we're not doing now that we believe could help them recover more money, or a project, something that's backed up and something that has a shelf life as far as that goes. And so we use that premise as our strategic growth plan, and it's not voluminous. It isn't something that you're going to work off of high volume, but that's not what we look for. And we try to stay in our lane and understand what we're really good at. And so from that, then we create niches as for our strategic business plan. One of our niches is what we call sensitive care accounts. I've got two of the largest cancer centers in the country, and we've been 30-year plus business partners with them. And you know, nobody goes to the hospital for anything fun. You certainly don't go to one of our clients that is a cancer center for anything that's fun. And so over the years, we've just developed a real, niche, real sensitivity to working with patients that are in really difficult circumstances. And so we carry that over to other clients and other lines of business and growth of just understanding where, you know, every healthcare account is sensitive, but there may be another level. And then we look for specialty accounts that just fit with us. We're a bunch of ex-athletes and coaches and all, and so sports resonates with us. So we have a program that goes out and looks for sports centers, which, you know, anybody dealing in treatment and recovery and of sports, training centers, rehab, recovery, sports orthopedic centers. That's just, we love that. That's just right up our vein. We can be very passionate about that. I have very few body parts that haven't been worked on by somebody in one of these centers. And so it's personal to us. We got skin in that game, literally. And so when we look for growth, that's just a natural, that's, again, we talk about byproducts. That just flows great with our ethos, our culture here. And we can be passionate about that because we love helping be a part of our client, having more resources to get people back out on the feet, back on the tennis court, back on the ball field, back on the golf course, whatever. That develops a passion for us. And those are all the things that we build into our strategic growth and adding to our business in the future.
Mike, this is Roy. I think for all of the people listening, I think two common themes that you're hearing are really delinquent accounts are everywhere. They are everywhere for the taking, but as a company, you have to define, I think you've heard it over and over again from David and Jay and Tim, that you have to define what is in your sweet spot, what's your niche, what do you want to go after? And once you define that, I think everyone has heard that in everything you do, you're trying to value add for your client. And by value adding to that client, referrals, if you build it, they will come. Referrals will come as you have that strategic plan of trying to value add every interaction with that client.
Yeah, Roy, this is Tim. I can't agree with you anymore that the few things that we've done is obviously added additional services. We started 70 years ago as a bad debt collection agency. Over the last 15 years, focused in on the healthcare specifically, and haven't done anything outside of healthcare in probably the last 10 or 15 years. So kind of finding that niche, like you said. And then also adding additional services, so doing a lot of first party work. I think if we look back 6 years ago, maybe 20% of our revenue was coming from first party revenue. And now it's about a 50-50 between first party and bad debt. And then also offering our clients many additional services that we just get a little, we get more sticky in there. And they appreciate that. Utilizing our technology and leveraging our technology to allow our clients to benefit from that is another big part of that. But, everybody's been kind of saying finding their niche. And I think the one niche that we have found and where a lot of our growth has come from is with healthcare consolidation. And so our model for about the last 10 or 12 years has been to look for the multi-facility, the larger healthcare organizations around the country. There aren't too many standalone hospitals anymore. And so as we've grown a lot just from our existing clients, acquiring other healthcare facilities around the country. And I think that's been a big one. Jay, you mentioned that we share clients up in your neck of the woods, and that's a perfect example. I mean, they're buying and buying like crazy, and which is a benefit to both yourself and I.
Right, Tim, I just add to that. Well, another thing is to try to be mindful of these other opportunities that may present beyond the outside the traditional, and even I would consider for purposes of this discussion, first party as well as would be considered traditional as well as bad debt. But many times we found some things, and this sort of benefits you along down the road in terms of some maybe having some credibility with the clients, because we found we have a couple of projects going right now where we've been asked to come in and either help work down a receivable, or there's been some insurance issues, or some things have just happened within a system or within a practice, and they just don't have the resources, so they come to you sometimes almost in a panic. But if you do that for them, you make it work. I mean, you got to look at it, you got to price it right, you got to make sure that whether it's contingency or you might have a different pricing model to make sure that you don't lose your shirt on it. But it'll build a lot of really goodwill with clients, and they'll remember you next time that there's opportunity. So it's just really keeping your eyes and ears open at all times for ways that you can set yourselves apart.
I will say, though, that to echo what Jay said earlier in this conversation, that since the title is What Keeps You Up at Night, one of the things that keeps me up at night is that no matter what we try to do to grow, the percentage-wise of placements from our major clients continue to grow as well, exponentially. So percentage-wise for our company, we still have a lot of eggs in a few baskets, Jay, because of mergers and acquisitions. And even though you're, as an agency owner, you're working hard to try to alleviate that, because of the current situation in our industry, it seems like percentage-wise for your company, it doesn't pan out as well as we would like it to. So, Mike, that's something that keeps me up at night.
let's turn the discussion inward for a few minutes, and instead of looking at, you know, new business or current clients, let's look at inside of your company and the importance of culture and how having, you know, there was a study recently I saw where the researchers concluded one toxic employee does more damage than I can't remember how many sort of mediocre employees. So, you know, that, you know, making sure that the culture in your office and making sure you've got the right group, that's got to be something that's incredibly important. So maybe each of you can talk with sort of how you're fostering or you know, sort of approaching that, you know, that area of your business to make sure that, you know, what's going on inside your offices is exactly the type of culture that you want. Roy, maybe you don't mind starting this time?
Sure. On the culture front, my first thoughts as I thought about this question were it's just an uphill battle because of what's going on with our society right now. As you look around, you have a lot in terms of defining a culture within our company. You have a lot of outside forces. You have a lot of experiences, effects, attitudes, expectations of the employee before they even walk in your door. So it's something that can keep you up at night is, okay, how do we manage this? How do we, to your point, Mike, how do we catch that rogue employee before, you know, before they do have a large negative effect? You have so many forces that affect your company. As the government continues to grow and grow, especially with its influence in our industry, and for example, in healthcare, just with 501R regulations, you know, a few strokes of a pen of the IRS, and it drastically affects both your employees, the culture. It affects the culture because of, okay, here's another regulation coming at us. How do we keep people positive with another regulation to handle? Also, the interplay between those regulations, how to manage that with technology. You constantly have to be and have, you can't do it on your own as an owner. You have to have team leads, supervisors, managers that are helping employees to look at things in a positive glass half full standpoint. And that can be an uphill battle. It can keep you up at night. Also, you know, we really have entered or are entering somebody, you know, we won't divulge the age of the panelists. However, we really have entered more and more, you know, as individual responsibility and the way that individuals look at their responsibilities as it decreases. You know, some people have called it the nanny state, but those employees are your employees. Those people are your employees, and you really have to devise strategic plans and attitudes how to manage this and how to, you can't stick your head in the sand and say, well, when they walk in the door, they're going to be different than what they are on the outside. You really have to look at it that these people are coming into your company, that they are vital to your company, and they have all of these influences that are coming at them. And how do we manage this? And how do we try to keep people positive? And on top of that, they're talking to people and trying to motivate them to pay their debt that have all of these influences on them as well. So you mix this with the age of consumerism on top of that, and you really have to have a plan to counteract the effects that the society is having on both employees, debtors, et cetera, et cetera.
Excellent. Does anybody else want to chime in with how they approach culture in their office?
Yeah, Mike, this is Tim again, and this is actually one of my favorite topics, and it's extremely important to myself and the rest of us at State. You know, as as I mentioned, or you mentioned in the bio, we are a family business. My grandfather started the company 70 years ago. So I'm the third generation. And we take that very seriously around here from a family standpoint. And, we've also mentioned the growth that we've had, and it is difficult to maintain that same culture. And, you know, we also have multiple locations and it can be a challenge, but I think the important thing is it's a reminder as to myself as a leader that every decision that I make every single day is, you know, I'm making decisions not just for the employees themselves and for the staff, but also for their families. And I think I keep that in mind when making the right decisions. We're also very much in a people business. You know, we run call centers. They require people today. And you know, we're in the customer service business. You need to have happy employees in order to have, you know, to provide great customer service. So, you know, I've always had the saying of happy employees are the best employees. And I think we have a lot of those people here at State Collection Service. I think in order to do that, I make myself available to the staff as much as I can. As I mentioned, you know, we have multiple locations. I make sure to get to each one of those locations on a regular basis. And when I'm there, I don't just hide in an office. I walk the floors, find myself available to those people. I get a lot of great stories. I also, of course, you have some of the negative employees, but I think the key thing is if you get some negative feedback, the best thing you can do is turn around and do something about that. It might change that one person's mind who's also going to, you know, if you change that person's mind, you can probably change a lot of other people's mind or perspective. So I think that's important. Follow through, listening to the staff. Recently, we started an ambassador program and have about 5 or 6 ambassadors at each of our offices. We meet with them on a monthly basis. They're in it every single day. And so we bring them an agenda. We ask for their feedback. We give them some homework. We've learned a lot from just that program, meeting once a month for an hour and talking to them. We also do an annual survey. We've done this for about 5 or 6 years. If you're not doing it, I would suggest and recommend that you do it from an outside third party. If you don't want to do it, that means you're scared to see the results. And I think we were scared to see the results about 6 or 7 years ago, but that gave us a baseline. And every single year since then, we've increased our scores. The last thing I'll share with that is the most common words used in the feedback that we get from our employee survey, and this has been consistent for about the last 3 or 4 years, is fun, family, and flexibility. And I think that's the other thing is you do have to create some fun to staff. When you're sitting in a cubicle talking to people all day long, some of those people aren't always the friendliest people. We got to make sure that we have some fun. Family is extremely important, like I mentioned. So we try to have as many family events as we can. We invite staff to bring their families into the office to do open houses, go out to baseball games, holiday parties, things of that. And then the flexibility. And I think that's what we're learning more and more about younger people today. The more flexibility they have at work is more important to them than it is their wage. And I think for them knowing that they can have a little extra time off or create their own schedule, they appreciate that more than they do the wage. So a few of those comments for myself.
Hey, Tim, you know, I was going to probably not say it as well as you did, so I won't take the time. But one of the greatest compliments I ever got in this business was, and you know he's a good friend of yours. In fact, I think he's in your benchmark group now. But when we had a benchmark group, David Williams came up here to Massachusetts. We all visit everybody's offices. Yep. And one of the things he said to me walking around, he said, Jay, you remind me of my father. Now, I'm not that much older than he is. I want to, despite what Roy may have said earlier, but my hair might be as white now. But he said, you know, you remind me so much of my dad, who's Gary Williams, another fellow past, present, great guy. He said, when you go around, like, you know everybody, every talk to you. Now, I was going to say this might not work for a company like Tim's, but obviously it does. And I think that it's really important to do that kind of stuff. And, you know, I go around, I just did today, we had some new people starting first party, made sure I don't go like days without meeting the new people. And just going around, last week we had a gender reveal party for one of our collectors. And I got the lucky thing. So I got to, you know, I got to be a part of it. I think they rigged it that way, honestly. But, you know, doing cool things like that, you know, it's just that's a tough business. You know, these people are talking to people that are really eager to hear from them, you know, and they're it's tough. And what we can do to make it a better environment, I think that translates into the product that we do for clients. And our clients pick it up too. When they come in here, they see it. It's not really concocted. It's genuine, and people would know if it's not. So I really like Tim's idea, and I'm going to probably talk to him offline about how to do those. We've done, you know, you have this client surveys, but I've never really considered something internal like that. So I think that's a great idea. But this stuff really goes a long way. You know, barbecues, pizza parties, we celebrate everything we can. We have a bigger month than the last month, or we get a new, anything we can, we celebrate it. And it really keeps people connected to you and to the culture that you're trying to create.
And I think that counteracts a lot of you know, if an employee is coming in from the outside forces that I mentioned and they are going to be negative, or you're trying to offset that rogue employee, everything that Tim and Jay just said are ways to counteract that.
Mike, I'm a little hesitant to talk about culture because it is such a passion for us. It'd be one of those things where maybe we could just do a whole webinar on it and listen to things that we've heard, like, you know, Jay and Roy and Tim have talked about, because to us, it's really where everything starts. Like Tim, we're a kind of a legacy business here. My father-in-law started the company back in 1985, and really, how we do things is a lot more important than what we do. And you've heard, you know, some of the guys echo, this is a very difficult business. Problem solving, sometimes when people don't want to be helped, people have different agendas, it obviously can be a very high stress environment. And for us, culture is always at the forefront as leaders of really is what some of the things we're paying attention to first, because, you know, in any kind of organization or environment, you have an ethos, and we call it a texture. It literally is as palpable as what you could run your hands on a wall. When you walk into a place, there's a feeling that you get, and it's very important for us that, you know, we really focus on creating a positive culture. We use a little acronym here called ECE. Our responsibility as leaders is to equip folks, all of our folks, with what they need to do what we're asking them to do, then to connect them, not just give them a product, but give them a process that allows them to win, and then to encourage them. And, you know, my wife and I used to have this 9-to-1 ratio with our kids. For every one time that we had to really address negative issues, we tried to put 9 positive touches on them. And sometimes that negative literally had a touch with our kids. And with our employees the same way, that we want them to feel like that there's that they overwhelmingly are more encouraged, and we won't turn our blind eye when we have a fail. If we're doing something that doesn't promote excellence in what we're doing, then we have to address it. And we have so many things that we're doing. Tomorrow we're doing what we call, about once a month we do a lean-in lunch is what we call it. And so we're focusing on our young leaders tomorrow. And so I'm not letting any of our administration other than myself to go in and meet with a number of our team leads and people who have some elevated positions that are all of them are millennials or even younger. And we're just doing some leadership development with them, the leaning in and helping them understand their role as an influencer. You know, are they a thermometer or a thermostat? Are they just... Do they just go along with the temperature, or are they helping create what the temperature is going in? And so for us, the word for us is intentionality. We can have great business plans. We can have great technology. We can have great business partners in creating all the products that we need. But for us, if we fail in this culture deal, and a lot of the same things that all the guys mentioned, we just try to be very intentional. We just had our Gasparilla races, Gasparilla race, the 5K, 10K, 50, and all that over the weekend. And we built a team that went out. We supplied T-shirts for everybody. And we have a little program that my wife is setting up, who also is in our company. It's called the Good For You program. And we help our folks. They're getting ready to do a weight loss challenge. We do nutritional things. You know, we give them incentives to be better physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And you know, our business is a ministry for us. And so creating that culture, it's never a destination. It's always a journey. And it's just something that we have a responsibility. And, you know, nobody's Switzerland. Nobody's neutral. You're influencing either positively or negatively every time you walk in a room. And it does bleed over into how we do our work, is the culture that we're promulgating. And do we have an intentionality to have something that's a positive environment where people are being equipped, connected, and encouraged every day? So it's a focal point for us, and it's something that we love to do. And fortunately, that's one of the exciting things that keeps us up at night.
Do you guys agree that this is more important than ever in your many years in this industry, given the increase of regulations, the increase of compliance issues in our businesses, the increased stress? I think I hear everyone agreeing that this is just more important than ever, correct?
Well, you know, so much is out of our control, if you really think of it. When you talk about the regulatory environment, talk about what Roy said, you know, we're coming against a lot of societal and cultural things. So what we can control is really what we have in front of us, and how you know, how extensive, how committed we are to doing that. I think it can sort of offset some of the challenges that we absolutely have no control over.
Jay, you say that. I when we were making our notes for this, because we were kind of originally just talking about just the things that are keeping us up at night. And Jay, that is exactly one of the things that I struggle with is there's so many, and over these years we've been in it, you know, I think we all would say the things, you know, it's always the thing, you control what you can control. I mean, there are exponentially more things that we can't control in today. You manage them, you know, and you understand that stress is never beat. It's always, it can only be managed. And so you're exactly right as far as what we're concerned. That culture is something that we can influence. It is something that literally we have, it's up to us. It's our choices. And we do have the ability to control that. And so we've lost a lot of things, but that is still something that's up to us. We can't control that. And control what you control, we got to focus on that absolutely.
Hey, Mike, it's Jay. I have a question. I'm not sure. Yeah. I know we're probably like 10 minutes to go, but there are some questions that were posted. Do we respond to those, or says by text or live? I don't want to ignore any questions, or is that just part of our discussion?
I will tell you, I appreciate you bringing it up, because we do only have about 10 minutes or so left, and we do have a few questions in the queue. So I will dedicate a few minutes to those, and we'll tackle those. But I wanted to just get through. I'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about, you know, something we've mentioned it a little bit, but we haven't really talked a lot about compliance and the issues that it's causing across the credit and collection industry. And curious, you know, how each of you, or if you could maybe just quickly go around the panel, how each of you are sort of managing, you know, whether you can control it or not, managing, you know, the expenses, managing the stress, managing the workload that goes along with compliance these days in your offices.
Well, prayer always works.
Amen. Amen.
And, you know, it's funny that there's this, and I do believe too that we're really not given to have the spirit of worry and fear all the time. And I know we talked about, you know, what keeps you up at night, and we want to make sure that those are on the call listening in understand that we talked about, it's not just the bad stuff that keeps us up. We worry, we lay awake if that's a, you know, can't be a good thing. We're trying to think about good ways to do things, because it's not just worry. We also have to have a sound mind about these things and really try to think things through clearly. And when you're worrying and fearful, that never goes together. So I think it's good to motivate you to try to be creative, but you don't want to get so debilitated by it. So I just want to kind of make that point. what we do here, we talked about things and we touched us a little bit, is we really try to deploy as much technology as we can. We've had our issues, and I don't know that we're going to get to the lawsuits, but for a little company like ours, we've had our share of them recently. Whether you fight them or not, and I'm not sure we're going to get to that, so I'll just hold off. From a compliance standpoint, we're trying to deploy everything we possibly can to make sure that we remove the human element as much as possible. I know we have issues right now because the case law and the regulations are so, everything's up in the air right now with the TCPA. So we're doing a lot of things, for example, where we're trying to insert the human, call clickers and different things to try to hedge against any of the TCPA stuff. So those are things that we're doing, is really try to depend more upon technology, QA processes. We're PPMS certified, so we're trying to use a lot of that kind of QA stuff to try to keep our eye on the ball, to fix things when they come up immediately, to try to avoid problems down the line.
I would echo Jay's comments as well. We use the phrase here, we try to be offensively defensive. If it's a gray area, we don't do it. Now part of my regimen is scanning, and I think Roy mentioned it earlier, and I smiled when he said, as the president and the CEO of my company, quite frankly, a huge percentage of my time and resources and thoughts are given to strictly the area of compliance, of just trying to maintain and not be a victim. And it's discouraging at times, it really is. But my brother Jay has encouraged me to, I don't have to worry. I don't have to let it take me over. I got to say, we've got not the spirit of fear. But for us, we try to be, again, that offensively defensive, to be, ignorance is no excuse. And the frustrating thing is you can do everything right. You can have everything lined up and you still end up in a situation where you're having to expend resources because, our culture that we're living in is just set up to be able to create the opportunity for people to take advantage or to try to take advantage of you. So again, we control what we can control, but we equip ourselves. And a plug for AccountRecoveries.net, Mike, your resources that you provide, your resources are viewed by our company every day. We go through, and that usually takes us in a vein somewhere else as we pick up. I love the tidbits at the bottom. I learn a lot of things that I pass along to other people, and I sound really smart when I do it. But again, you have to educate yourself every day. There's so many, and again, you can get, analysis paralysis. You can just go crazy by just absorbing so much information. But we do use all the technology. We look for all the tools. We look for all the trends. And we just try to equip ourselves so that we're not a victim. And if we have to, we just don't sit back. We are offensively defensive when it comes to this, and pay attention to the gray areas and just don't go there. Separate ourselves the best that we can and have the mentality, I will not let ourselves be victims to anything that I can control.
And that really is what keeps you up at night, as a good summation, which is, as Leslie, our chief operating officer here at Team, says, green used to mean go. Green doesn't necessarily mean go anymore. So anything that you contemplate to do, there is always a gray area, it seems, in our industry. And that can lead to potential liability, to potential lawsuits. But you do have to stay on the offense, and you have to tie technology to that compliance piece and vice versa. Everything you go to do technology-wise, you have to think about compliance, and everything compliance-wise, you got to try to find a technology solution. And that really is the only way to try to sleep better at night.
Yeah, I think everybody's covered a lot of my thoughts on this. Two other things that I'd mention is I think it's extremely important to educate the staff on what's happening in the industry. If somebody makes a mistake and it results in a lawsuit, we have to educate them and make sure they understand. It's a little bit of a slap on the wrist, but they need to understand you missed this step and this cost us this. And then also, giving them the things to look out for. And again, as others have mentioned, is utilize the technology that we can to protect them also.
Right.
We use speech analytics, which has helped a lot. But the other big one, and I see this off of one of the questions here, is data security. From a compliance standpoint, this is getting more and more critical, and that will put you out of business real fast. So I think making sure that you have the right staff or outsourced vendors to keep you your data secure is extremely important.
Excellent. We've only got a couple of minutes left, and we do have a few questions in the queue, so let's see if we can get through some of these quickly before we have to wrap up. But there's a question here about succession planning and whether or not any of you have done it, or, you know, if you have done it, what have you done? Does anyone want to tackle what they've done in this respect?
When you say succession planning, are you referring to succession ownership or succession planning within your organization? By that, I mean, does everybody have a bench? I mean, does everybody have someone who can step in for them within the department? So are you talking about succession planning to exit the business?
I don't have more information yet. So if a person who asked that question wants to clarify, that could be helpful, but I don't know. Is there a difference?
Michael,
obviously there's a difference.
Yeah. Are we able to respond to these on our own at all? I mean, by text. I mean, I don't want to ignore them, but I mean, I'm not sure that we're going to get to all of them. And some are going to be that's a pretty complicated one there, for sure.
Yeah, that is a complicated one. So if we have any, if the person who asked that question wants to clarify what they're talking about, we can circle back to it.
Mike, I'll just quickly add in there.
Yeah, go ahead, Tim.
From a succession planning, from internal staffing, on a quarterly basis, our directors are looking at each of their departments, looking at who could fill what spots, including all the way up into their own, you know, who would best fill their shoes. And that's happening on a regular basis, and I think that's important. And that's also just to be able to promote, promoting from within, and getting those people the training that they need to get to the next step.
Yeah, same here.
Excuse me. Okay, let's move on. Question, it was stated that compliance is an ever-increasing component. We talked a little bit about that. So do you have a dedicated person focusing only on compliance, or does that person do other stuff too? I'm guessing everyone's got a compliance department, but if you don't, and want to share, you know, how you approach compliance, feel free to talk.
Well, listen, Jay, we have an individual who does it as well as others, some admin things. We try to separate, like, say, consumer disputes. Those don't go to the collection floor. They go to this individual. So you know, the PPMS, all that kind of stuff, answering complaints, regulatory stuff, licensing, all tends to reside with one person, among other things, though.
Mike, we have a chief compliance officer. We're biased. We think he's the best in the country, but he's passionate about it. And we tie that into, he's also our chief information officer. And so he's responsible for all of our processes, all of our vendor processes as well, as far as global. He doesn't do all the hands-on, management. But why we do that is because we want him, from a compliance standpoint, we want every process, every vendor partner we have has to be vetted first and foremost from a compliance standpoint. And so it's a big job. He works hard. He works long hours. But that's our thought. It's a little different. You know, obviously, everybody has a focus on compliance, but we do have a dedicated chief compliance officer who also, again, has the overview and oversees all of our vendor processes and our business partner relationships, because that's where it starts, is compliance.
Our question, with hospitals getting hit with ransomware attacks, are any putting pressure on any of you to prove your cybersecurity practices are solid? I know, Tim, you talked a little bit about that, but does anybody else want to share whether or not cybersecurity is something that's keeping them up at night and how they're dealing with it?
I think I'm too ignorant to be worried about it. I have an IT director who assures me, he says he checks, he has all the stuff built in. He responds to the client security questionnaires. It's so out of my depth, but it doesn't really, I assume it's being done because we discuss it and I'm confident in him. And he's kind of functioning like David said. He's not the compliance officer, but a lot of compliance stuff goes through him.
I think, this is Roy, the only thing I would add is that as you talk to IT specialists and cybersecurity specialists, you almost always hear that the greatest risk is within your own walls. It's within employees, it's laptops, cell phones, data, and just make sure everyone has that button down as best as possible.
Yep. Hear, hear.
Right. Yep.
Excellent. Well, we're past the hour that I promised we'd be done by. So I apologize if I didn't get to all the questions, but I tried to get to as many of them as I could. Before I let everybody go, I want to thank Roy, David, Tim, Jay for their insights and their time today. Really appreciate that. Also want to thank Microbuilt for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.microbuilt.com. Thanks to everybody who participated and asked questions. Again, one final reminder, please take a minute and fill out the feedback survey that you'll see when you log out or when you get in your email tomorrow. A recording of this event will be posted to accountrecovery.net, hopefully within the next couple of hours. So feel free to take a look at that panel. Thank you so much. Really appreciate your time and the insights.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks all.